Hello, this is Dan Lebatard. Welcome to a new South Beach Sessions. Today we're going to have Freddie Gibbs. He is, whether you think he's an up-and-coming rapper or that he's already arrived, he is climbing in the hip-hop game with an impressive ascent artistically. He's got a new project out. The Alchemist's new album, Alfredo, is available now. You should check it out because he gets into Album of the Year conversations because stylistically in hip-hop, he's different. And throughout history, hip-hop has been a social conscience for America that has given voice to a lot of things that you're seeing right now in America. So I want to talk to Freddie about that. But first, I want to remind you that ZipRecruiter is the sponsor for this week's South Beach Session. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. South Beach Sessions always presented here by ZipRecruiter. Freddie, I wanted to bring you in here because I really did want to hear from you now in this particular time in America as a strong voice for hip-hop.
I definitely think that it's a very turbulent time right now. I can say this. I'm sitting over here in West Hills, Calabasas, in my home, and I'm seeing them, like, looting Beverly Hills and things of that nature, you know, and I'm kind of afraid. You know, I got my kids here and stuff like that. So, you know, it's like, I don't know if they're going to, if this is going to spill over to the Valley or anything of that nature. But, you know, man, I just think that, you know, a statement definitely had to be made. So I'm really not mad at people burning down the Gucci store and Target and all of that stuff, man, because, like, I saw somebody say this, but I mean, you know, but black people have been, like, trying to speak out loud for years, man. And we kind of need white people to help us get our voice across right now and to make change, because the only thing we can do is protest and march. And, you know what I mean? But if nothing changes politically, then it's going to be the same thing all over again.
So don't you think, though, that anyone hearing you say that from, you know, not the minority perspective, what do you mean you don't have any problem with the looting? You could see why they might find that objectionable, no?
Yeah, definitely. I can see that. Like I said, a statement had to be made. Obviously, the marching and the protesting didn't do it, you know, and now America is seeing itself burn, you know, live on TV. And this is the result of that, man. You know, we keep dying, man, for real. And it's like nobody hears us. Our cries are falling on deaf ears. And when you start burning up some of these white businesses, you start to catch their attention a little bit more, you know, and I feel like they start nudging their buddies on Capitol Hill a little bit, like, hey, man, we need to change something because I'm, you know, you can only get insurance claims on so many things. Like, this is going to keep happening. If the officer doesn't get convicted, it's going to happen again. It's going to be a continuous thing. People are not going to stop protesting and rioting and looting. Like, LA's on a lockdown right now. Like I think it's like a 4 p.m. curfew or something right now. That's crazy. Like I said, I mean, I feel like a statement had to be made some kind of way. And it's sad that it had to be like that. But it's people dying, man. Philando Castile, Terrence Crutcher, you know what I mean? George Floyd, you know what I mean? Mike Brown. There's so many names. I could go through the names all day. You know, this is a difficult thing for people in our country, man. We 5 times more likely to get incarcerated and 5 times more likely to get killed by the police, man. It's a tough thing to deal with being black in America right now.
What do you think is happening, though, that this one is resonating when you can name those names and many more names about all the times we've talked about this and it didn't result in the world burning? It didn't result in actually the United States feeling united, because I think part of the fear that happens here is I do think that when white people are seeing on social media the video of what looks like an armed militia through a residential neighborhood saying, light it up onto the front porch of, you know, what sound like kids or no threat at all of a sudden, hey, look, that might be a little more like what it feels to be black in this country, where when you're leaving the house, you don't know if you're going to run into something that feels like an armed militia.
Shout out to George Floyd and his family. We definitely out here working and raising money for the families and things of that nature. But I think this one hit a little bit different because we've all been cooped in the house for 3 months. You know, dealing with this coronavirus thing. So I feel like it's a lot of cooped up emotion, you know what I mean, within the whole country. It's a lot of rage. So with this, I feel like they just threw gas on the fire and it just exploded, you know what I mean? And now it's kind of out of control. There's going to have to be some kind of huge, huge political change or some law made, something made on behalf of, you know what I mean, black people, you know, dealing with these police shootings and the way we're policed. Or, like I said, it's going to be the same thing all over again. It's going to be another riot, more violence, more burning, because people are literally fed up. And, you know, being cooped up in the house, that did nothing but add gas to the fire.
I remember hearing Tupac talk about this forever ago, and I know it's a bit of an ancient reference, but he had some prophet that he was aspiring to, and I'm just guessing that some of your social conscience is formed from there, right? Because hip hop has always had this strong, strong voice in that respect. And when he was talking about the idea, I don't know if you've ever seen this clip. I don't even remember where it is I saw it, but he was talking about the first day we see you're throwing food around all over the place. We got nothing to eat. So we're like knocking on the door one time. Hey, can we eat? Can we eat? And singing a song about can we eat? Then a week later, it's I'm hungry. I'm hungry. And then a week after that is like, no, man, I'm going to bust through the door, you know, and that's what's, it feels like that's what's happening right now.
Yeah, that's what it feels like, man. Like, let me be, you know, real clear. I don't condone breaking the law or hurting anybody or anything of that nature. But like I said, a statement had to be made, man. And it's sad that it's being made like this. But the same thing, we saw this in the 90s with the Rodney King thing. But at least with the Rodney King thing, like, the feds were going to be, will step in and convicted those officers, you know what I'm saying, when the state didn't. But it's like, I don't think we even had that luxury right now. Like with Trump handling the FBI and everything the way he's handling it right now, I don't even think they're going to pick the case up. So it's just difficult when you know your government doesn't have your back. It's hard.
Well, help me with this part of it, because you're not even confident, right? Like the country seems so very appalled, and yet you, through the lifetime of experience, don't seem even confident. Hey, this might happen again soon, because they get off, because the police officers, because we find yet another reason that the justice system can't prosecute police officers who are murdering people in cold blood in a way all of us can see on video, black, white, Hispanic, anybody else.
Right. I really don't know, man. I don't know if I see any hope for that, because like, unless they have to make some type of law, like it has to be some type of thing instilled where officers are very fearful of mishandling or, you know, abusing, you know, everyday citizens. Like, it's crazy because I seen, like, I know this is kind of like weird and kind of off a little bit, but I seen this show called Watchmen on HBO. Or like when the police officers have to call in to the station before they could even pull their gun out to approach a citizen. So, and I was like, I don't think it should go to that, but I think that, you know what I mean? Like watching that show and looking at where we're at now, how like all the police have to wear masks. It's like everybody's running around with a mask. It's like, man, everything's so chaotic. It's just like, I don't know, man. Art just imitates life, man. It's just, it's crazy right now. It definitely has to be some type of something implemented on a police officer to make them ease back on the brutality, because it's getting out of hand at this point.
What scares you the most about what it is that you're watching?
My kids, man. I got a 2-year-old and a 5-year-old. They're young, so they don't really know what's going on. Eventually they're going to get older and they're going to have to go out there in this world or what's left of it. The country is bleeding right now. You know, I don't even know like when my kids are going to start back school. You know, with the coronavirus thing, I didn't know what was going to happen. But now with the temperature the country's at right now, I don't really know. I really want to keep my family in the house.
Let me ask you this question, because what you're saying, I have so little access to, but what you're saying, I just recently started having a conversation for the first time with a friend of mine who's a police chief about like owning a gun, because I'm scared that the apocalypse is approaching, and you're speaking in those terms. Like you're speaking, like you're, the way that you're talking about it is like the purge is coming.
That's how it feels. That's the energy right now in the air. People are blocking off highways. Like last night, you know, my friend went to go get groceries. They ushered them out of the grocery store, like with this curfew thing, you know, it's seeming like kind of getting close to like martial law out here. It's weird because I feel like we had rumblings of this when the coronavirus thing started. So it just, everything seems so intertwined and connected. You know what I mean? In March, they were bringing in tanks into the neighborhood.
Well, let me ask you this, because I'm not sure how many people are seeing that clearly, but I come from parents who are exiles. And so what they described as where freedom was lost, it looked a lot like the video we're presently seeing, where you've got all the things where you're afraid. And, you know, the next day they just press a button and change the currency, and then everyone's kept poor and now the government's in charge. Like, you're thinking much broader in terms of systematic dominance of all people, right? Like you're talking high level stuff.
Right. Definitely. Definitely. I definitely feel like the government has some type of plan. in place for something. Like I said, this wasn't the first time, you know, a black man got killed at the hands of the police. You know what I mean? This isn't the first, this medical pandemic that we're dealing with. This isn't the worst medical problem that's hit the CDC or hit the US before, you know what I'm saying? But I feel like everything has just come to a head right now. The last 4 years of this Trump presidency has been, you know, the country's just been bleeding, man. And right now it's just like, it's all just coming to a head.
So what do you do as someone, because I've always been really fascinated by how hard it is to make it in your business. When Kanye West has some of the political views that he has, like, I'm not looking to start like sort of random beef between two guys, but how do you look at that when he's coming up on the wrong side of a lot of different things? And he has to be somebody that you grew up admiring, at least some, right?
Definitely. I love them. I just put up like 10 boxes of Yeezy shoes in my shoe room. Definitely don't agree with that view. You know what I mean? But, you know, we are human beings and we entitled to our own political views. And I can't, you know, tear him down for, you know, how he feels. You know what I mean? Because I just don't agree with it. You know, we just got to just simply agree to disagree on certain things and keep it pushing. You know what I mean? And try to make the world a better place in that way instead of being as divided. And I definitely didn't agree with him going in the White House, chilling with Trump, wearing a red hat, all of that. I think that it provided a bad image. But all in all, you know, he's a human being too. Everybody make mistakes and do their thing. But if that's his view, that's his view. We definitely got disagreements on a lot of other different things. But, you know, definitely got respect for the guy, though.
Who do you think of in hip hop as your mentors or the guys that you borrowed from or the guys who left their marks in influence?
I say definitely first and foremost Scarface, because that was probably the first street rapper that I ever heard, you know what I mean? And it was instantly fascinating, you know what I mean? I was bumping his tapes in like the fourth grade and my mom was like, what is this you listen to? So, you know, Scarface, sure. And then when I came up in the game, I started working with him and now he like a big brother to me now. So definitely Scarface for sure, you know what I mean? Like where I come from, like Scarface is like, you know, the god.
And so what is the goal? Like, and I know I segued from the world's problems into your career, but, they're intertwined, right? Because I think of hip hop as just informing people. Hip hop's been warning people that this is coming for damn near 50 years.
Yeah, definitely. I think that, I think it's difficult for a lot of hip hop artists right now in this climate of that the world is in right now. Cause for one thing, we can't even do performances. We can't do shows right now, with the coronavirus thing. A lot of guys weren't making music that kind of fits this time. You know what I mean? It was a lot of party, turn up kind of music in the game in the, you know, top 40. So, you know, I think that these times right now is going to change music a little bit. I think that guys are going to start making more politically conscious records and kind of dive into that realm of things a little bit musically. You know what I mean? Instead of the
Who did you like when you were young from that realm? Or you're too young for Public Enemy, right?
Yeah. Definitely. I mean, respect to Chuck D though. I love Flavor Flav too, but, from that era, from Public Enemy era, who do I love?
No, just like social consciousness in terms of like, I like what that, and never mind the music or the beats or anything else. I just like what that group or person has to say.
That's a good question. Black Thought, Mos Def. They always got a message in their rhymes and they're great rappers. You know what I'm saying? I got a song with them, by the way, on my last album. But, you know,
you got a song with just about everybody on your last album. Tell me this part of your career, like what has happened here that has allowed you to blossom? Because once you're getting the respect of those people on your albums, then you're doing the album of the year stuff.
Just perseverance, man. Cause you know, my last album was the first album that I ever put out on a major label. I never even put out an album on a major label. I've been working it independent. But sticking to my guns and not really conforming to anything in the industry, you know what I mean? It's kind of like brought me my respect level. And, you know, once I started like working with legends, still sharp and still. So I started, you know, getting better as an MC, better at picking beats, you know, and just knowing the overall direction I wanted my career in, just being a student of the game. I think that when you stop being a student of any game, you start to fall off.
Is there anyone that you've worked with that you've sort of marveled at the craftsmanship, like really marveled? Because I'm guessing that when this is happening, you think of these folks as your peers and what you're making is art. So it's subjective, but I'm wondering if there's somebody that you've been like, damn, like he is really, or she has really sculpted this thing in a way that's impressive.
Alchemist, for sure. Alchemist is definitely, one of the most underrated and one of the great hip-hop producers of all time. You know, when I handed him the songs off my last album, I knew we had something great. But then when he gave it back, when he mixed and mastered and did everything and put his stamp on everything, like, it was just, it was truly amazing. And guys like him and Madlib, I'm great at what I do, but they, you know, at the end of the day, they become the glue to make these projects stick together and make them classic. It's not classic without them.
You're somehow young, but also a bit of an old timer, right? Like, you're somewhere in the middle between, like, when you hear Ice Cube and Snoop Dogg or talking about mumble rap or judging the young guys, you're a little bit of an old head in spirit, right?
A tad bit, but you know, sometimes I get on those guys too for, you know, hating on the young guys. I'm like, man, chill out. You know what I mean? Cause I'm not their age. You know what I mean? I grew up listening to them, but at the same time, I'm not 22 either, but I like some of that stuff as well. So I think that I kind of bring a good medium to the game. Like, you know, so I don't like the older guys judging the younger guys too much, but I don't like the younger guys not respecting the older guys as well. So, you know, you got to kind of bring it to a happy medium.
Well, see, but that's very zen of you and very spiritual and very kind, but it also isn't going to lead to the kind of public beef that you need to have in order to, you know, climb your way up the ranks, with the professional wrestling elements of this.
I have so much public beef, rappers be scared of me, man. So, you know, I'd be good on that. Like, I don't know, I'm not one to, guys really want to have beef with, you know what I mean?
Well, what is it? What is it? How did you become who you became? Like, how did the things that shaped you growing up, like, how did you get this is a very difficult game to climb in, like, really difficult.
I think that what drives me is being the only person, the only rapper really, you know, out there where I'm from Gary, Indiana, man. I grew up in a real blue collar, you know, tough town. So I think, you know, and my mom, you know, she was a postal worker for 30 years, man. And I watched her get up every morning and just, you know, grind. I think I get my work ethic from her. And I just got that stick-to-itiveness, you know, in me. That just come from growing up in Gary, man. And just, you know, those Rust Belt industrial towns give you a different, you know, I feel like, you know, you cut from a different kind of fiber when you come from there.
What kind of jobs did you have?
Oh, man, I had some whack jobs. You know what I'm saying? I worked at shoe stores, stuff like that. I actually went to the Army before. I got kicked out of the Army, played college football for a year, got kicked out of there. You know what I mean? And then, you know, that led to just like me working at like Payless and Best Buy and Circus City.
Wait a minute though. What did you do to get kicked out of both college football and the Army? Like what was happening there?
College football, just not going to class, failing all the drug tests, smoking weed. The Army pretty much the same, just smoking weed, not going to the duty stations, just not being diligent, you know what I mean? And, you know, just allowed me to get kicked out. But getting kicked out, all of that stuff, you know, got me into music, so it was all good. I needed those experiences.
What would you say are the things that sort of shaped your childhood outside of those jobs? Like, what was happening in your household with your mom working like that? Were you noticing it and just sort of like being in a loving household, or were you angry about it as a kid?
I was definitely in a loving household. You know, my mom and my dad, you know, they were married the whole time that I was there. And it was a bit of a struggle at times, you know what I mean? Because, you know, my dad would be in and out of work, you know what I mean? Not really holding down any steady work, but my mom would be working all of the time. It'll be some difficult times, but for the most part, man, I remember happy times in my household. The things that I got into the streets, I don't really think it had anything to do with my household, so to speak. I just think that it just had something to do with the environment that I was in, being in Gary. You know, you step outside, it's gangs, it's drugs, it's a lot of things going on. You can either choose to get into those things or choose to run away from them. At one point, you know, I was doing everything I could to stay away from it. At a certain point, it grabbed me, and then I had to, like, take my lumps and do what I had to do and learn about myself. You know what I mean? A lot of that stuff taught me more about myself, and it brought me to where I'm at now. The music speaks all of that. You know what I mean? My ups, my downs. You know what I mean? I learned not to get too high on my highs and not too low on my lows in life. And, you know, I can keep everything moving swiftly that way.
Can you help explain to me, like, what you're talking about there? Like, what, can you give me some more specifics, or am I getting too close to the bone by asking?
Nah, you good. Yeah. Streets, man. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, Gary is an economically deteriorated town. You know what I mean? It's a lot of lack of opportunity. You know what I mean? And like I spoke to you before about a lot of the couple of opportunities that I had to get out of that those pitfalls, I, you know, squandered those. So being depressed about that, you know, depressed about mainly not the Army. I didn't really give a damn about being kicked out of that. You know what I mean? Like, but.
You don't have to clean up your language here. Oh, okay. I hate the idea of censoring you. You should speak the way that you want to speak.
But sports, you know, that was something that I truly, you know, love. And you know, I just didn't work hard enough at it. And that ate away at me, you know, for years. You know, that was a thing that, you know, that really hurt. That was something that I felt that I wanted to do to change my life. I knew I was going to be somebody or something coming out of, you know.
But what happened? Explain to me when you say the streets pulled you back in, like where you're like, I'm trying to do everything I can to stay out of this life. What does that mean? And when it pulls you back in, what does that mean?
Yeah. Lack of opportunity, man. You know, when it's lack of opportunity, you know, no job, or you're just being, you know, in some instances, I could even say I was being greedy. It was things that I wanted that I couldn't obtain working a job, you know, so you turn to the streets, man, like selling crack. You know what I mean? Like, as for a lot of, you know, drug dealers, you know, you start out selling weed, you know what I'm saying? And then, like, you know what I mean? When you see guys that's elevated in the game and they got cars, they got jewelry, you know what I mean? They got the girls, they got all the bitches, and you're like, oh man, all right, what do I got to do to get that? You know, so it just became not envy or jealousy or anything like that. It just became like, man, I want to elevate my life and make my life better. You know what I mean? I'm miserable here in Gary, Indiana. So, what do I got to do? And if I got to like sell some drugs to do that, I ain't got no problem with that. If I got to rob a couple of people to do that, I ain't got no problem with that. You know what I mean? But I'm just glad that while I was in that frame of mind that I didn't lose myself. Because, you know, like I said, 99.9% of the people that get into that, they lose themselves. They lose themselves. You know, I had a lot of people in front of me die. A lot of people go to prison. You know, so I had those examples of really what not to do, you know. And, you know, I had to, you know, do what I had to do to, you know, even, you know, fund things in my rap career. Because like I said, I didn't have a major label backing me. I didn't have like a big homie behind me with money that was helping me get in the studio, helping me get promotional materials. You know, being a rapper costs a lot of fucking money. That's why I'd be like, man, y'all sure y'all want to get into this? I'd be telling kids, I'd be like, yo, this shit is a costly profession. It costs a lot to build a rapper up to start monetizing it. You know what I mean? Like, you can't just wake up one day and be like, oh, I'm rapping. And, you know, you think that you're just going to make $1 million. It don't work that way. So you got to invest into it. It's like anything. You have to invest into it. And if you're not willing to invest your own bloodshed, tears, and your own dollars, then, you know, who's going to want to invest in you?
Can you explain that to me, though? Explain to me what the grind looked like and looks like as you're trying to build yourself, as you're trying to build this thing into a career that can actually sustain your two kids.
Right, definitely. And this is before I even had kids. But like I said, it was cost involved. Me and Lambo, my manager, I was living in Atlanta for a while because I got a record deal when I first started rapping, like within like the first year or two of me rapping at Interscope. It was like, I don't know, like 40 grand or some shit, pennies, bullshit. And I did that and I stayed over there for a year and I got dropped from Interscope because, you know, we couldn't really figure out what to do with, you know, me at the time. And after that, I was like, I'm off this rap shit. I don't want to do it. I got, you know, one little check on that shit. That shit was bullshit. You know, I thought a lot of people in the game were fake. I thought a lot of the industry A&Rs were fake. I had moved to L.A.
Were you big enough yet in the drug game then that $40,000 was something that you could laugh at and be like, no, this isn't how we're going to play this?
No f***ing way. Hell no. Nah. I was, you know what I'm saying, selling houses at that time. You know what I'm saying? Like shit like that. So definitely not. You know what I mean? It definitely provided a boost. You know, you know, mm-hmm. from there, but, nah, definitely not. I think that after that, I kind of had to dive more into the drug game to, you know, sustain funds to be able to rap.
So how does that work? Like that? So that's a difficult prospect.
When I say that on my album, I say I'm literally selling dope to rap. Like, because, you know, like I said, nobody would give me anything. I ain't have any homies that'd be like, yo, hey bro, give me 30,000 so I can make this album. You know what I mean? So I can mix, master it, make it top quality. Give me, you know, a good studio so I can make it right so that I can, you know, do some things and make some money off of it. It costs a lot of money to do that.
So wait a minute. You're telling me it's kind of a shit business model, right? Like in terms of that the odds are very strongly against you being able to climb up to a place where you can make a career out of it because you have the funds to self-sustain yourself.
Oh yeah, definitely. It's probably like one out of 100,000. You know what I'm saying? Or one out of a million. For the odds are probably the same as like making it to the NBA or the NFL. You know what I mean? Like it's like this is a difficult business to get into when you really, really break it down. It's so many. I mean, yeah, you could look at Instagram and all of that, and you see all the rappers, you see all the jewelry, all the cars, all of that shit, man. Most of these motherfuckers are failing artists, you know? They look good, you know what I mean? A motherfucker might be sitting there with $200,000 worth of jewelry on, but I guarantee he ain't got that shit in his account.
That's not for you, huh? That's not for you. That none of that stuff is for you. I see the necklace you've got on now. That you're going.
I got some big ones downstairs too. But this house I'm sitting in, I own it. You know what I mean? My family own their home. You know what I mean? So it's like, of course, you know, when you're young, you're going to make some bad investments. I definitely did. I wasn't financially literate early on in my career. I was doing a lot of dumb shit as well. But you know, shit, as a man, you got to grow. You know, when I started having kids, that's when I was like, let me kind of take this shit a little serious because, you know, this rap shit is not promised to you. You know, you could be here today and gone tomorrow.
Can you explain it to me, though? So explain for the audience that would have no idea what it takes to build a rapper or how much of the architecture you're required to do yourself without a lot of help. And a lot of times, of course, the drug game is going to help you because if you need a lot of money, that's a place where there's a lot of money, disposable cash. So explain to me the specific difficulties of how your climb looked.
Really, mainly it was like studio time, promotion, getting video shot, things of that nature. You can't do that without funds. You know what I mean? And usually when an artist, signed to a record label, that's what they're doing. Or they sign to anybody. You know what I mean? It's like you're getting a loan. You know what I mean? You're getting a loan to start your business, you know, so to speak. You know, you gotta, like I say, you gotta have studio time. You gotta have videos. You know what I mean? You gotta make the artist look like a fucking artist. You know what I'm saying? Wardrobe, all kind of shit. You know what I mean? Like, if nobody believes the product that you're trying to sell, how the fuck can you sell it? You know what I'm saying? So, my manager, man, he used to drive me around when I moved to LA, before I even got a car, he used to drive me around his Volvo and I'll sell crack in the Volvo. You know what I mean? Cause, you know, we needed things. I wanted to go on tour, you know, and nobody wanted to take me on a tour. So I had to make music and call city to city and pay these promoters to let me perform in these venues.
Hold on a second. Explain this part again to me. I don't mean to typecast you or stereotype you, but the idea that you're selling crack out of a Volvo, I need more of an explanation why did you have to do that? Because you needed immediate funds for something?
Yeah, we needed funds to, you know, like I said, to make our records. You know, we needed, you know, we had to mix, master, you know, we had to get studio time to record it. You know, we wanted to go perform, you know, nobody knew who the fuck I was. So I had to pay to perform. So I had to go to places and be like, hey, can I pay $1,000? Can I pay $2,000 to get on this show? You know what I mean? So it became like that.
Wait a minute. Hold on. Is that normal?
That's very fucking normal. A lot of guys do that. You know what I mean? To get yourself out there because, you know, if nobody knows you, who wants you to perform? You got to increase the demand. You know what I mean? Like I had no demand. Nobody knew who I was. So I was like,
and so how did that change then? So what are the specific landmarks that you look at and say, here it changed, here it changed, here it changed. And it got easier and I got business acumen. And now I'm a businessman running. I'm the CEO of my company because I've gotten a lot smarter in every way.
Correct. I learned the game living in LA, me and Lambo, we just learned it step by step. You know what I mean? I think that, when I started, my dad, see man, it's crazy. My dad always told me something when I was a little kid and it just sticks with me. He said, always be so good that you can't be denied. So, you know, no matter what. So, you know, I really, you know, put my foot into my craft and really grinded in the studio and made something so dope that it had to be noticed. You know, like if you go back to 2010, I was probably the only person on that XXL freshman cover thing that like didn't have a record deal, you know? But I like basically forced XXL to write about me because I just stayed in the streets in people's face, you know, with the music. And, you know, it was just like, who is this guy? You know what I mean? I just made people always say that, you know what I mean? But, you know, I had a kind of street myths about me anyway that kind of.
Oh, wait a minute. What just happened there? Because I would have said street credibility to fill in the thought and you made it a mist.
Myth.
Okay. But wait a minute. Let's go through this for a second. Like how many of them are myths and how many of them are real? Like you have to have real scars. There is no way to climb in your business without real scars. Correct.
Definitely got real scars. You know what I mean? You know, there's other things that people trump up a little bit, I say, to, you know, that kind of like made
you, but you were not someone to be trifled with, right? It was just, you had a rep. Now, okay, but explain that part to me.
Decent stuff, you know what I mean?
How did that get developed? Like, what, were you a bad person, a cruel person, a hardened person?
I'm definitely not. Actually, I'm a very quiet person. You know what I mean? I'm, you know, real swift. I don't really, you know, when it comes to a confrontation, I don't really talk a lot. And, you know, people kind of know me for that. Like, you know, things just happen.
Stealth. Know? Okay. So you're stealth danger. And I should move away from this conversational topic because you don't want any more said about it, because it's better that you have a mystery of menace where people don't know what you're actually capable of. That's what you're telling me.
Yeah, definitely. And that, you know, the unknown scares people, you know.
Who do you like now? Who do you like that's doing it right now where you're like, that is, I admire the craftsmanship.
Kendrick Lamar. You know, if it's a rapper that I'll probably like wake up and think about when it comes to like comparing work to, probably Kendrick. I think that he set a real high standard when it comes to making music, and I admire that.
What do you like best if we go through one, two, three on Kendrick Lamar, for example, and I ask you to sort of rank them, whether it's lyrics, whether it's craftsmanship, whether it is style and art in the way that he presents himself, like what are the top items you look at and say, well, that guy's style is something to be chased because of how influential it is?
I admire him from a lyrical from a technical standpoint. He's the best rapper, I think. You know what I mean?
Just in terms of, but you're talking about the way, the delivery here. I'm talking about the writing. I was thinking that the writing has a certain strength to it too. I don't know how high.
I say techniques. I mean, the writing, the delivery, everything culminated together. You know what I mean? Because you have to have all of that to make it flow. You know what I mean? And because, you know, you could say, I could write you a rap, but you can't say it like me. You know right. what I mean? You can say the same words, but you're not going to deliver it the way that I'm going to deliver it. The way he puts it together with, I like that. He knows how to make a classic album, you know, which is a lost art nowadays.
Do you have a mark where you felt like you had made it? Or I don't know, maybe you might be one of these people who still doesn't feel like he's made it. But do you have some place that you point to and we're like, okay, it got easier after this?
I say after I put out my album with Madlib last year, I started really feeling like I was in the rap game. I was like, you know, this rap thing's kind of cool. You know what I mean? Because, you know, after I caught that false charge for that rape case in 2016, like I was really contemplating not even like dealing with rap anymore. Because I was like, if I got to go city to city and like a girl can say that she had a dream about having sex with me and I could damn near get convicted, I don't really want this job. I think I want to just do something at home.
You know? Well, what happened there? I'm sorry. I never even heard that story. Oh, so yeah. I'm ignorant.
Long story short, I went to Austria to do a show. A girl, had some type of interaction with a former friend of mine. And afterwards she reported them to the police. And, 10 months later she went to the police and said, oh, I had a dream that Freddie was involved as well. And, you know, I went over there to do a show. They arrested me. I stayed in jail for, it was like 3 to 6 months I was over there and, overseas dealing with this case. But there was no DNA, no kind of evidence. They blood tested me, swabbed me, all of that. I never even high-fived this girl before. I didn't even know what she looked like. So it was a total, farce against me in Europe. You know what I mean? And, I can actually still go back and like do some like legal stuff with that, but I, you know, I just kind of just chose to just like, you know, let it roll off. I'm getting blessings in all kind of other ways. So I don't really want to go back to Austria and spend another 3 or 4 months in court, you know, trying to sue these sick little girls, you know what I mean? Cause that's, you know, that's kind of what they were. So, you know, but after I dealt with that, I thought that, that my music career could be over. I think that was at the front of the Me Too movement. You know what I mean? But, the fact that I handled it so, you know, valiantly, but I think it just spoke a lot about my character, man, because I definitely wasn't involved in it, you know, and would never, ever be involved in anything of that nature. So, and people that know me knew that was the truth. So I really wasn't worried about my name being stained or anything of that nature. And when I came back, I was like, yo, I'm not even going to like drag these girls through the mud because they tried to get over on me. But it's a lot of people that tried to get over on me and like, God bless them. I'm going to keep it pushing and, you know, I'm good.
What were those 3 to 6 months in jail like?
Part of it was like actually in a prison, and the other portion was like on bail, house arrest inside of like an apartment that I had to pay for in Austria. You know what I mean? Which is a racist ass fucking nation. That's where fucking Hitler was born at. You know, it was difficult because, you know, I've been in jail in America. And, you know, my mom could just pull up to the jail and come visit me. You know what I mean? Or my girl could come visit me. I can get commissary or whatever, you know, easily. There, it was difficult. It was difficult for me to get my commissary. It was difficult for anyone to come visit me because I had to fly the family. I had to fly my mom. That was the most difficult part. Having my mom have to come over there and see me in a foreign prison. Like, after I worked so hard to, you know, to do something constructive with my life, you know what I mean? And which I was doing. I was over there on tour. I didn't commit a crime at all. It was just, that was the most difficult thing, the distance with family and, you know, my kids and stuff like that. But, that's difficult on any person that's in prison. So, you know, I can't say, you know, my situation was worse than anyone else's. I was just at a longer distance.
Hold on a second though. If I may, I think I'm going to have to slightly correct you on that one, because in the middle of that story, just very matter of factly, we took a sideswipe into Nazism. Okay. So yeah. You took us there. I didn't do that. That's someplace that you, and so it's not quite like every other when you're in jail and you don't know if you're going, you don't know what's going to happen because it's not a free country and because it's a false claim and because it's a dream or whatever else. And you just don't know. They might do what to you?
Shit. I mean, you know, I was locked up with a lot of like neo-Nazis and skinhead type of guys. I would definitely see a lot of swastika tattoos, things of that nature, but they didn't really bother me. They didn't really bother me in jail. I mean, they saw me and they kind of like, you know, I think God was really with me when I was there because nobody really bothered me. You know, people, they would say their little thing in their language in German or whatnot, but nobody really would bother me. The thing that I was more worried about was getting convicted for some shit that I didn't do. You know what I mean? Because like, really, if this case happened in America, I wouldn't even been indicted. You know what I mean? But in their country, a woman's statement is considered evidence. So since her statement is considered evidence, it was enough evidence, which was bullshit, to indict me. You know what I mean? If this shit would have happened in fucking Ohio, the judge would have looked at it and been like, oh no, I'm sorry. There's nothing there. You know what I mean? But over there, they really take sexual crimes very, very, very seriously. You know, they came in my cell one day and they said, you're going to get 10 years. And I was like, oh, okay, cool. 10. All right, cool. And they was like, well, if you tell us today and admit it, then we'll just give you 3. And then I was like, nah, I ain't doing that. I'm just going to go to trial, man. Like, you know, all the evidence points in my favor. Like, I'm not about to admit. I don't want to be here. Trust me, but y'all not. This isn't enough to break me down mentally, enough for me to break down and give you a false confession so that I can go home. It's not even that serious, you know.
Were you scared?
Definitely. I was scared because I had kids, man. You know what I mean? Like, I had been locked up before. Like I said, I got gun charges, stuff like that. You know what I mean? But I never had a kid and being behind bars. You know, my daughter was like 2 at the time. So, or 1.5, not even 2 yet. So I was like, man, what the fuck? You know what I mean? So I'm really scared for her. You know, mainly more so than I'm scared for myself.
And so while you're in there, it wasn't horrific. People left you alone and you were able to come out of that changed how?
Just I appreciated life more. I appreciated the rap game more. You know, it made me work a little even more harder because, like I said, this could be taken away from me in the blink of an eye. So it definitely made me a more productive person, I would say. It made me more discreet on like who I bring around me. Like, I don't like
distrustful. Well, it made you more distrustful, right? I mean, yeah. But wait a minute. It wasn't like you were all kinds of trustful before, were you? Like, you weren't naive, were you?
Not at all. But the crazy part about this, I didn't even bring these girls around me. And this shit just happened, you know. And then when it happened and they figured out that they didn't the rapper, they one of my homies, they wanted to get the rapper. So it's just like, I feel like this was all financially and racially motivated. You know what I mean? So, cause I've never had any type of situation with any kind of female, you know what I mean? Like, rape is some shit that you start doing when you're 34 years old, you know?
Well, I'd like to end it on a lighter note than that. Like this, I've enjoyed the conversation a great deal, but we really, at the end, the subject matter was very heavy. It was unpleasant. I didn't,
some people got, you know, you gotta be, you know, I'm never uncomfortable talking about anything. You know what I mean? This is my real life. I speak this thing with the rap. It's therapeutic, very therapeutic, because I've never had therapy in my life. I'm just now getting open to this idea of sitting down and talking to a person and having therapy. You know what I mean? So, you know, the music has been my therapy for the past 15 years, man. And it's been good for me, you know, and I get to share my experiences with people in a way that I probably never would. I probably would never walk up to a person and tell them this shit that I'm saying.
Well, but Freddie, the thing I'm laughing about is the idea of I don't know whether there's criticism around this. I don't know whether anything that you're saying right now that I'm not treating respectfully enough because the charges are somehow more serious, even though I believe everything you're saying. But you volunteered to me, someone who did not know while talking to you, hey, yeah, and I also caught this rape charge. Like that was something, yeah. That was something you volunteered.
Correct.
no, why would you come up to somebody and just say that? That's probably not the thing that you want to drop on their lap.
You know what? It don't really matter to me because you know what? I like to bring awareness to, you know, certain things too, because you know, it's guys out there that's like victims of falsely accused guys, you know, and I gotta, you know, I said this before in another interview. I kind of got to be an advocate for that, you know, sometimes, you know what I mean? And I got to be an advocate for women that's like afraid to speak up. You know, I got a child. So, you know, speaking on this thing that I went through, you know, maybe it'll give somebody else some insight and they can maybe relate to it.
Well, what was the Me Too portion of it that you went through?
This shit happened to me before the Me Too movement even started. So it was right before the Me Too thing. So I can't say I had a Me Too case because it wasn't a second person or it wasn't a me to begin with. So, you know what I mean? So, you know, shit, all my shit was fake. But right after that, I started seeing the Me Too movement start to kick off. I start seeing the Bill Cosbys and Cuba Gooding Jr.'s and guys like that, you know, starting to go to get indicted and things of that nature. So, you know, it is what it is. It's a whole lot of that shit in the music industry, man.
Well, you must be at a sort of maximum level. I'll let you go on this note, given that we've covered a lot of subject matter. You must be right now in your life at a sort of maximum level of distrustful, no, of everything right outside your walls.
Yeah. Right now, man, like I said, I don't know what's going on in L.A., you know what I'm saying? They burning up everything, you know what I mean? Like, I heard they goddamn trying to burn down Randy's Donuts, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's getting wild outside. So, nah, I don't really, you know, even with the coronavirus, you know, your level of trust went down because you didn't want to be around anybody, you know? Like, I got a masseuse, and I got mad at her ass because she asked me, I was like, yo, I need a massage. And she was like, well, who you been around? What the fuck? You gotta come give me a fucking massage. Like, you shouldn't worry about shit like that. But I had to take myself back and be like, yo, I kind of, you know, I understand, you know, I gotta respect it. You know what I mean? This is how she feels. But no, I'm not really trusting nobody right now, man. Like, I'm in the house. I got all the guns loaded up and I'm ready to go, man.
Please tell the people why it is they need to be supporting the stuff you're doing.
Oh, man. Rock with this Alfredo, man. Last year I put out Bandana. That should have been, you know what I mean? Album of the year. I think it was album of the year. I think I came right back at him within 11 months and gave him this. So, you know, support it, man. You know, I don't think no other rappers really doing that. I don't think anybody's really rapping on my level right now. So I kind of put the game on notice right now. I'm waiting on these other guys to drop.
See you later. Thank you.
Right, and thank you for spending. Rest in peace to George Floyd, man. Philando Castile, everybody that fell to police violence. Much love.
Thank you, Freddie. Appreciate the time.
Appreciate you, brother.
Our thanks to Freddie Gibbs. That was interesting. The racial conversations on our show are going to be interesting during this time because we have a group of people around us that you want to hear from on times like these when America sort of needs a voice to articulate the feelings that some or all of us are feeling. So I urge you to listen to the radio show. Even if your routine has changed, go back to the radio show and enjoy what it is that we're talking about there. If indeed you can enjoy the heaviness of these times, because the people that we have on the radio show with us are a fun group of people that will give you a minority perspective at a time that it sounds like people want and are willing to listen. So check out the radio show and support what we've got going. Lebatard and Friends Network. Rate, subscribe, review. We're dark next week. Well, we're dark this week as well, but we're dark next week. Off is what I should have said. Off. We're off next week. We'll be back with you in 2 weeks. Thank you for listening.